Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 141 of Nerd Pride Radio. 141, according to my friend Kaz, is a semi-prime, a product of two prime numbers, namely 3 and 47. And since those prime factors are Gaussian primes, of course they are, this means that 141 is a blue integer. Blue integers, see, I know you're asking, so he's further explained for us. Blue integers are of the form n equals p times q, such that it's a semi-prime for which p and q are distinct prime numbers congruent to 3 mod 4. That is, p and q must be in the form of 4t plus 3 for some integer t. Integers of this form are referred to as Bloom primes, meaning that the factors of a Bloom integer are Gaussian primes with no imaginary part. Got that? Okay, those were all named for computer scientist Manuel Bloom, which again goes to further reinforce my theory that, you know what, if you go far enough, you can just, don't you feel like they're just hunting for something, just making something up there just to put their name on it? Does that, I mean, I'm sure this is important somewhere. I'm sure there's some branch of physics, mathematics, engineering even, where knowing that it's a Bloom integer is incredibly important. And that those are special numbers that allow who knows what to happen. But for me, it just, man, it just feels really random, doesn't it? So beyond me. But, okay, also Kaz continues and says, you know what? The end of Sonnet 141 from Shakespeare? Thy proud heart's slave and vassal wretch to be, only my plague thus far I count as gain, that she makes me sin, awards me pain. Or, as my father used to say, she makes me want to write bad checks. Okay, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Our sponsor this week is the Marine Life Institute, jewel of Monterey Bay, California. Darn right. But speaking of which, we just saw Finding Dory today for Father's Day. All right, congratulations me. And for Father's Day, it was amazing. It was amazing because it's the first movie I've seen in IMAX 3D. Can you believe that? All my life, and we've been to IMAX theaters before, but it was always to watch the educational stuff, like the IMAX theater at the zoo, and you go in and you watch it's all documentary stuff. This is the first real, actual, you know, wide release film, you know, big blockbuster, huge screen event that I've seen in IMAX. And holy cow, it was amazing. Aiden and Eli loved it, but also said, the glasses still give them a headache. So we may not do it again, simply because, okay. You know, it's a lot of extra expense. If they're just going to come out with a headache, not worth it. But, wow, what a good movie. It was, is it Finding Nemo? No, it's not as good as the original, maybe. But there's so much in it. It is a romp. It is a rollicking adventure that also is still, is powerful and meaningful. And it's just really good. I mean, who doesn't like Dory? Who doesn't like Dory? She's awesome. Anyway. That's not what I'm here to talk about. Let's see. I said ask me how I'm doing today. I gave you our sponsor. That means, it's time for a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta talk is where I pull back the curtain a little bit, open the kimono a bit. There you go. Talk about the podcast, the website, behind the scenes stuff. Just kind of let you guys know what's going on. And there's two parts to this. And maybe I'm jumping the gun talking about it right now, just because we haven't really settled everything at this point. But it looks like we're going to be creating what, for now at least, and probably for the future, we're going to be calling the Nerd Pride Network. The Nerd Pride Network of quality nerd podcasting. We have so far, me, obviously Nerd Pride Radio, Me Like Trivia, my friends Pat and Andrew and Pete, who were the first ones to get on board and take up some forum space to talk about their podcast, and I love Me Like Trivia. And then after that came Angry Geeks Versus with D-Rod and Milhouse, which every week, still quality, especially if you like a lot of comic book talk. Man, they are good. It's a lot of stuff, but again, it's also a lot of comic book. And I love listening to Angry Geeks Versus. And then my brother is finally returning to the field of podcasting after what's it been, like a 6-year absence now, Kyle. He is coming on to do a podcast co-hosted, it's him with four of his kids. His four kids will rotate co-host responsibilities, and they are calling their podcast The Cast and the Curious. And if I understand correctly, the format is, every week, they take a cast member from The Fast and the Furious, and they discuss that cast member, that person's role in the movie, and then whatever conversation that happens to spark. And if you've ever heard my brother podcast, he is an entertaining bastard. So, and his kids are just as funny as he is. All right, maybe not quite as funny as he is, but they have their moments. I mean, there's some really, really bright kids and really fun. So I'm looking forward to his podcast a lot, and he will be our fourth on what I think we're going to be calling the Nerd Pride Network of quality radio podcasting, quality nerd podcasting. Damn it. My brother wrote a stinger for this, and I should have brought it with me so that I could actually read out the whole thing for you. I'm really excited. I'm really excited. And at this point, look, Nerd Pride Network, all that means is that we're going to say, hey, look, we're a network, and eventually we'll get a page for it on my website, and we'll get all that set up so that you'll have an easy place to reference all four podcasts, or more if other people join. Who knows what's going to happen? And maybe there'll be other technical stuff down the road that ties them all together and makes it easier to follow stuff or whatever. But right now it's just a matter of, we've created our little club and we've decided that we're members, and that's all good enough for us. And I'm really excited about it. This is something that has been on my mind since Me Like Trivia first started. I was just so excited to have a friend starting up a podcast, and I was so excited to be there at ground floor and get to hear them develop their style and put their stuff together, and it was just really cool. And so I asked them if they wanted some forum space, and the minute I did that, I thought, oh, you know what? One of these days, what if we could make a whole network of podcasts that all come through here? Wouldn't that be awesome? And as it turns out, we're starting to do that. So I'm really, really excited. Again, I don't know what it's going to mean for us. I don't know, you know, we all already support each other. We're just going to continue doing the same stuff. But, you know, we get to put a name on it. And I don't know. There's something really cool about that. I really like this. So I'm very happy. And since I have brought up my brother's new podcast, The Cast and the Curious, and he says they're getting some episodes started so that they can kind of have a bank of them ready before they start releasing them. And he wants some listener mail. He wants people to write in with listener mail with any questions that they might have for him. And he said it doesn't have to necessarily be about The Fast and the Furious. It doesn't have to be about anything in particular. He just wants some listener mail, funny stuff, serious stuff, whatever it is, just so that they can have listener mail on every episode. So they're going to have like 3 or 4 that they record before they actually release them. And he just wants to have some listener mail so they can have that segment established and have something fun to talk about and that kind of thing. So you guys have always been wonderful to me about sending me Podomatics and my listener betrayal. And, you know, Kaz wrote the nerd fact for the episode number this week, et cetera, et cetera. You guys have always been good to me. So do the same thing for my brother, all right? It's castandcurious@gmail.com. Send him some listener mail. like I say, it can be serious questions. It can be made up stuff. He just wants some mail. He wants to have some stuff in his hot little hands to talk about, and kind of get him kicked off here. So I am excited for him. Let's support him. Let's make this thing happen. All right. Enough of the meta talk. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week. Have you guys thought that maybe I should rewrite this whole section of copy for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast every single time? This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Whatever's been on my mind for that's where I stumble. Whatever's been on my mind. I don't know why that trips me up. Probably 2 weeks out of three, that trips me up. I stumble there every single time, and yet I don't bother to reword this because I'm lazy. That's why. Well, either way, it's still true. And you know what? I'm probably going to keep it just because now I've made it funny to me. And that's all that matters is I'm entertaining myself. Anyway, if something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Straight into my master list. First thing up, it's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. And just to warn you guys, my meticulously plotted portion is going to be really rapid fire this week. I almost considered making it just a fingertips episode because I don't have a whole lot on each topic. But I have a bunch of different stuff that I just wanted to make sure I got here on the table. One of them was my brother's podcast. And now my nerd culture report is a graphic novel called Flutter by Jenny Wood. And Flutter is, Jenny Wood writes it. And the artist from 215 Comics is Jeff McComsey. I'm pretty sure that's the right name, is the artist. But Jenny Wood is the writer of Flutter. And I just received it for Father's Day. I had put it on my wish list of stuff because out of nowhere, I noticed as I'm, you know, flipping through my list of people who like Nerd Pride Radio on Facebook, every now and then I look to see if there's new people, if it's anyone I recognize or don't recognize, you know, where they might be from. And one of them was Jenny Wood. And I didn't know who she was, but she said she's a friend of my brother's, which surprised me. And so I looked up and she's a comic artist, which means my brother at some point has recommended her work and I've just completely spaced it off and didn't do anything with that knowledge. But now I thought, oh, you know what? She's bothered to come over and like Nerd Pride Radio. I should check out what her stuff is. And so I put her first, the first episode issue, the first book of Flutter onto my wish list, and I wound up getting it for Father's Day. And so I received it, and then after we got back from the zoo, I read that thing in one sitting and just could not get enough. As soon as I get done recording here, I have to go order the next book because I'm hooked. Flutter is amazing. It really is. I'm so impressed. It is a comic that is, I don't know. I don't want to categorize it because I don't want to give away too much of it. I will give away the part that I knew ahead of time, which it's on the back cover and it's on the, I mean, if you go look the book up on Amazon, this is the blurb you'll get. But it is about a girl who becomes a boy in order to get the perfect girl. And so it is a comic about sexuality, about transgender issues. It is, but there's more to it than that. It puts it into an action setting sort of thing anyway, it's a great comic. Again, I don't want to give away too much, but I'm telling you, I'm already in love with these characters, and I'm just floored. It's really well written. Jenny Wood has also written a novel, A Boy Like Me. I think that's the name of it. I'm sorry, Jenny, if that's wrong. Again, I've just now gotten the comic. I've just now read it. And so I've just done just the bare scattering of research just to find out what else she's done, what else I can get my hands on, because I'm really in love with this comic. This is really cool. So, to all of you guys, it's available on Amazon. It's probably available other places too, but you know, I'm lazy. I just go Amazon. But it is available there and it is really, really good. I highly recommend it. It's a comic book. You'll enjoy it. Trust me on this. Okay. Is that everything I had for the Nerd Culture Report? It is. That's Jenny Wood. That's Flutter. All right. Next. Here it is.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, now for something completely different. This is stuff I don't have a category for yet. For Father's Day, I got to spend the night at the zoo. And I know I'm mentioning Father's Day a lot, but that's because it is Father's Day right now as I'm recording. So, to all of the dads in my listening audience, and I know there are a lot of you, hey, happy Father's Day. This is a great day. I hope you guys had a good time. I hope you got good stuff. I hope you did fun things with your kids, with your families. I hope so. Anyway, for me, for Father's Day, coincidentally, we wound up at the zoo overnight. It was a Cub Scout trip. And, it is, when I say the zoo, I mean the zoo, the best zoo in the nation. And if you have a zoo near you that you think is the best zoo in the nation, I'm just here to inform you that you are categorically and objectively wrong, because I live close enough to the Omaha Henry Dorley Zoo that I could go spend the night there, and it's amazing. The Henry Dorley Zoo is consistently ranked one of the top zoos in the nation, if not the top zoo in the nation, one of the top zoos in the world. They are phenomenal. And they were getting these nominations, these nods, before their latest round of improvements and constructions and expansions and the stuff they're doing now is just the coolest. Spending the night in the zoo is something I've done before, but this time my wife has heard so much about how much fun we have every time we go that she decided she'd be one of the chaperones this time as well. And so it was me and Lisa, and our Cub Scout is Noah, but then his older brother Eli, as a Boy Scout, well, he wanted to come along anyway. And then Aiden, who is, you know, Aiden's not even in Scouts anymore, and he's already out of high school. And he said, wait, I never did get to do the zoo trip. I'm going. So, okay, cool. So if only Jacob and Aaron had gone with us, we'd have the whole family. But anyway, we had the five of us, and you go in at the zoo closes at, well, they close at 5, but they don't kick everybody out till 7. And so, at 7 o'clock, as the last of the patrons are being ushered out, they open up a back gate, and we get to drive into the zoo. If you've never been to Henry Dorley, you don't know how weird that feels. I've been to Henry Dorley every year that I live in Nebraska for my entire life. All right. So when I was a kid and we lived in Nebraska, we went to Henry Dorley Zoo at least once a summer. And now that I'm an adult and I've moved back to Nebraska and I live here and I'm with my kids, we go at least once a year, and we love the Henry Dorley Zoo. And the idea that we get to drive onto the grounds is phenomenal. They opened up like 3 separate gates for us, and our little wagon train of scout vehicles all traveled inside, and we got to drive up and park right behind the aquarium. Because, that's where we were spending the night, is inside the aquarium. And there were other overnight trips there, like church groups and other stuff that we saw. But they all had to, you know, like one of them goes to the gorilla house, and I don't know where the others all went. But nowhere nearly as well air conditioned and comfortable as the aquarium. And clean. I've heard that the gorilla house has a lot of cockroaches at night. Because, you know, it's a big building full of apes. But the fish, no cockroaches in the fish house, baby. And we got to sleep in the shark tunnel. Have you been in a shark tunnel before at an aquarium? They're awesome to start with. But the shark tunnel is, I mean, it's a glass tunnel that's, you know, 40, 50 feet long. And it winds back and forth through the middle of this huge aquarium tank. And sharks and giant sea turtles and stingrays and all sorts of other fish swim over and around this tunnel constantly. And that's where we slept. It was just, you know, it's nighttime, so there's just the barest bit of lighting, but you're still seeing the silhouettes of all of the sharks and stingrays and the other fish that are swimming over you all night long. All right, maybe that creeps you out. Not me. It was beautiful and relaxing. I love sleeping in the aquarium tunnel. Is amazing. I mean, look, you're in a sleeping bag on a cot. It's not like you're getting a great night's sleep, but it's beautiful. It's really so cool. And we all chose to sleep in the tunnel, but we had the entire aquarium to sleep wherever we wanted. We could do whatever we wanted. We could wander around the aquarium at night and peer into the cages, and some of them had a little bit of lighting in them. And so you wait for your eyes to adjust, and you peer in, and you can see all the fish and the octopus and the jellyfish. They were amazing. Swimming around at night. Really cool stuff. And so we had it all to ourselves. But we show up, 7 o'clock. We drive inside, we get all of our stuff unloaded, and then they take us on a special evening tour of the zoo. The zoo is abandoned, and they take us all sorts of places. We got to go into Kingdoms of the Night, which is the Kingdoms of the Night is the nighttime. It is really cool. They have, it's this huge, it's underneath the Desert Dome. It's this huge set of exhibits where they have all sorts of nocturnal animals. And throughout the zoo, wherever they have animals that are inside buildings, they always run the lights on the day-night schedule of whatever whatever the native habitat of that animal is. So if you go see the penguins are running on a day-night cycle that matches the current day-night cycle of the Antarctic region. Okay? This is it's really cool. So the lights are going on and off at weird times. But the only exception is the nocturnal animals in Kingdoms of the Night. They reverse that so that they have the animals all think it's nighttime during the day while patrons are there. And then they think it's daytime and they all go to sleep at night, when there's nobody around to watch them. Well, we come in right at the evening and it was just incredible with the giant white alligator down there. We got to see the beavers at work, building their dam. So much cool stuff. We went through the jungle. They have an indoor jungle there. And going through the jungle in the evening, this was something that we did not know was going to happen. That jungle is this, it's bizarre how they have it set up. So animals are kept in certain enclosures, but then they have, birds that can fly anywhere they want inside this jungle building, and they have bats inside the jungle building. And normally you just see the bats roosting. But if you go in at, let's say, 8:30 at night like we did, the bats are all out. They're all out and they're everywhere. You go through a tunnel, you are walking across a bridge, you're climbing up and down the stairs with the vines and all this stuff, and there are bats, huge fruit bats, swooping everywhere. And at first everyone gets really freaked out because, you think they're going to hit you in the head because that's how close they're flying to you. And then, by the time we got done with that building, it was like, oh, look, another bat. Yeah, whatever. There's something interesting over here. Like, it just got to where bats swooping at your head was just another part of life. You could just, oh, whatever. Yeah, that's fine. Let's go over here and do something cool. The bats everywhere. We got to go through the gorilla house just as the gorillas were laying down. So some of them were still awake and some of them were still asleep. And we got to the big enclosure where the teenage gorillas are. And these teenage gorillas, all three of them, were in there, and they looked like they had just laid down to sleep. One of them was still kind of kicking around, but the other two looked like they were sleeping, and we kind of woke them up on our way in, and they were just funny. They were just funny. They came up to the glass, and since it's not all packed with people, it was just the few of us, they were willing to come up and make faces and entertain and play a little bit, except for the teenage girl. I wish I could remember her name because we actually saw her. Oh, it was Bambio. Bambio was there when we saw her when she was a baby. Her mom had problems, and so she wound up in the nursery, and we actually got to see her when she was less than a year old being bottle fed up at the nursery. So we've followed her every year that we've gone back. Really cool. And she kept wrapped up inside of a blanket, and the kids were all fascinated by this. My kids especially all kept asking me, Why would she wrap up in a blanket like that? Why? Because it looked so human. It was just such a teenagery thing for her to do that she's all wrapped up in the blanket. And then we wake everybody up. So she kind of rolls around. She looks at everybody coming in, just annoyed, and flips the sheet back over her head, pulls everything up tight, and she's going back to sleep. It was just cute. It was just, anyway. I'm babbling and gushing because I love going to the zoo. And I don't know what your opinion is on zoos, but, our Henry Dorley Zoo is absolutely amazing. I'm watching as we're getting on the SkyTram, because look, admission to the zoo is not a cheap thing. And there's stuff inside the zoo that you can do that all costs extra money, like riding the SkyTram. And so, it's $3 to ride the SkyTram and the SkyFari. And as I'm watching it, this thing is mostly full, and every single one of these cars that comes by, you know, like a new car, a new carriage, every 20 seconds, and each carriage that comes by has two or three people on it. So I'm like, every single one of them, click, $6, click, $9, click, $6. I mean, just money, money, money all day long. And yet it's a not-for-profit agency, and I've seen the stuff that they're building, and yeah, some of it looks extravagant, but it's all for the animals. It's all, we saw where the elephants have been put in. We just got 6 new elephants. They haven't had elephants at the Henry's Orley Zoo for years. You just got 6 elephants, that they rescued from Africa where they were dying from the drought. And, we saw where they're going in and the designs of the final structure that they're going to have built for them and how many millions of dollars that's going to cost. The new lion enclosure. Oh, the lions finally got moved out of that awful cat house. The cat house was built back in the 70s, and the cat house was clearly designed for people to come and observe animals, as opposed to, like the gorilla enclosure and the orangutans, and now this new, the new lion area, where they are clearly designed for the animals to have space and have entertainment, have stimulation, and get to move around and be animals. And then, incidentally, it's also well designed so that people can walk around or over or near and be able to see what's going on without disturbing the animals too much. And it's just really cool what they've done with it. And that's the sort of stuff they keep designing. And anyway, I absolutely love Henry Dorley Zoo. And like I say, all this money they bring in, but all of it's going for not just our entertainment, but also for scientific research, also for the comfort of the animals, as much comfort as they can have not living in their natural habitat. And it's just cool. Super cool. I could gush on about this zoo for ages and have already. And I don't think this is the first podcast I've done that on. But let me see if there's any other zoo stuff I had. Real quick. Let's see. Aquarium, bats, gorillas, elephants, Dala Dala Bill, y'all. Yeah, I got all of it. Okay. And then that night we watched Zootopia in the zoo. I've seen Zootopia before, but it's still a great movie. And so we're watching Zootopia in the zoo. Awesome. And then after we got up, we went out, we had some lunch. Well, we saw more of the zoo, but then we got up and had our lunch. And then we went to see Finding Dory. So overall, great Father's Day weekend. We had a good time. All right. Enough of that. Let's get into the science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Really quick, I have been looking at the Higgs boson particle because we were talking about naming of stuff in science, specifically naming of the Sonic of the Hedgehog gene. Totally off topic. My son and future daughter-in-law have purchased themselves a hedgehog, which they have at home, and it's a white hedgehog and absolutely beautiful, very cute. They put up videos all the time. They are treating this like a baby, and they play with him, you know, on schedule every single day. He's getting lots of socialization and all this. And they named him Miles Hedgeworth. Apparently from the Phoenix Wright video game. Did I get that right? Named after a lawyer. But Miles Hedgeworth is their hedgehog. And Miles is adorable. But the interesting thing to me about that was they said the first question almost everyone asks them is, oh, did you name it Sonic? And they're like, no, we didn't name it Sonic. So it occurred to me to wonder what percentage of hedgehogs are named Sonic? And so I Googled that, and apparently that's not a stat that people are keeping track of, which, oh, they should. But what I did learn is that people who are hedgehog aficionados, people who are the kind of people who would go to a hedgehog convention, those kind of people, apparently they hate the name Sonic. They hate the name Sonic as uncreative garbage for a hedgehog. Why would you do that to a hedgehog? Everyone names their hedgehog Sonic. And so no true hedgehog aficionado would ever dare to name a hedgehog Sonic. But I would bet that there are lots of them out there because there's lots of people who think it would be cool to own a hedgehog, but they're not hedgehog experts. They're just someone who thinks it would be cool to own a hedgehog. I know my sister-in-law, has a hedgehog named Sonic, or had a hedgehog named Sonic. I don't know. That's what happens when you let an 8-year-old name your hedgehog, right? It's just going to happen. All right. Anyway, but that's not why I was here. I was here talking about the Higgs boson. I remember now. Anyway, I had been talking about, it was Sarah Beth asked me how I felt about kind of cutesy or comical names of genes in particular, like the Sonic the Hedgehog gene, which is its actual official name. And I had given my opinion at the time was that I felt that for the most part, yeah, funny names, entertaining names, there's absolutely no problem with them as long as they don't detract from the science. And after I got done talking about it, I listened back to that episode and I realized, oh, the perfect example would be the Higgs boson. The idea that, and this was not its official name, this was a name that got tagged onto it, but the God particle. The idea that that thing has been called the God particle in so many media reports, and especially when they were just on the verge of discovering it, the search for the God particle, that drove me nuts because that led people to make assumptions about what was going on that weren't going on, and it distracted from the science rather than contributing to it or generating interest in it, or appropriate interest. And I found out, because I wanted to then know, okay, well, how did it get the name the God particle? And it turns out that Leon Lederman, Dr. Leon Lederman, who is a Nobel winning physicist, wrote a book, 93, I think. I don't know. It's 20-something years ago. And he wrote a book about the search for the Higgs boson. And the book was called The God Particle. The God Particle, and it had some long subtitle that goes with it. But that's where it came from, is people latched onto the God particle from the title of his book. And I'm like, oh, come on, man, you're a Nobel Prize winning physicist. Why would you do something like that? Turns out that that wasn't his original title. His original title was The Goddamn Particle. Oh, see, now that is a much different connotation, isn't it? Did I tell you guys about this week, last week? I know I told Yancey, and I know I told my son. I've told the story a few times, and now I feel like I've already told you guys. Doesn't matter. I'll tell it again. Anyway, it was supposed to be The Goddamn Particle, and his editor was not approving of that. And so, God, I think I did tell you the guys this week. I am just repeating myself. This is what happens when you get old. Sorry, guys. He wanted to call it that, and his editor said, no, you can't call it The Goddamn Particle. That's just not going to work. But how a God particle? And he said, I don't really think so. And the editor convinced him that it was a good idea. Turns out his editor was wrong and he shouldn't have listened. But, oh well. Water under the bridge, right? And now that we've actually found it and people realized it didn't have any magic in it, they've stopped calling it the God particle for the most part. I'm sure there's still references, but it's not as ubiquitous as it once was. It's not, you know, it's not cutting edge news anymore. All right. Anyway, see, that's it. Those are some of these are going to be really quick. Last thing I have is my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. Did I say last thing? I got one more after this. Anyway, on my gaming table this week, the only thing I have is Paranoia. I am playing an email game of Paranoia, and I just got to let you know that out of the dozen people playing right now, three deaths. Oh, I'm feeling really good about this. I love watching people die in this game. Obviously, I would never do anything to intentionally cause that, but, you know, things happen. It's mostly their own fault, really. But three deaths in Paranoia. This is good. See, that's the end of the gaming table. The last one, the real last one, before we get into the Podomatic, is Roku, which I still call Roku, even though I mostly don't use my Roku box. Mostly now I just use my smart TV. But Roku used to be the box that I did all of my streaming television on, and which is thus all of my television because I don't have anything except streaming television. And don't forget, if you have given up cable TV, you've given up satellite, all you watch is streaming television, whether that's YouTube or Hulu or Amazon, or because I have YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. Those are the four main ones I watch, and there's still some other sources that, you know, I'll tap into once in a while, like Crackle. We'll occasionally have something I can't get somewhere else, but those are the big ones. If that's where you're getting all of your television from, as I am, please do not go around telling people you don't watch TV. I don't watch TV. Yeah, you do. You do. I've covered this before, but it's worth repeating. Yes, you're watching television. You're just not watching it on cable or broadcast or satellite. You're still watching streaming television. It's still TV. All right. So don't go getting all pretentious about it. Don't get all better than that because you don't have television anymore. Yeah, you do. All right. Anyway, for years, I have always said, look, give me a streaming service that puts on commercials just like they put on commercial television. And thus, I can, for free or for little cost, I can watch this channel and just have the regular commercials I would normally have, except it's all streaming instead of having to have some other service for it. I would be happy to watch your commercials if you would just give me a cheap or free channel. That's all I'm asking for. And now, it turns out that Hulu is giving me exactly that, and I take it back. I take it back. I thought that's what I wanted, but you know, I'm still paying as much for Hulu as I'm paying for Netflix, and Netflix isn't forcing me to watch commercials. I've gotten really spoiled. That's what the problem is. I shouldn't resent the commercials. I really shouldn't, because, again, it helps mitigate the cost. It helps keep my viewing habits cheap, and that's what I want. And I guess my real problem with Hulu is that the commercial streaming is just not up to par. I've gotten spoiled with Netflix. Netflix is so good at providing me my streaming service that, you know, when I pull something up, I wait a few seconds for things to load. Boom, I'm watching. If I want to pause, fast forward, rewind, all of the buttons are intuitive and it goes exactly to where I want it to go and I'm watching exactly what I want to watch. If I'm on Hulu, I am afraid to fast forward or rewind because I can't control the damn button. There's so much lag in it that if I go to rewind something on Hulu, it's possible that I hit the button and it responds, but it responds like 4 seconds too late. So now it's rewound forever. Or else, I hit the button and it's going to respond in 4 seconds, but I don't realize that, and so it's always, oh, did I hit the button? So you hit it again, and now you've just screwed the whole thing up. We've had problems with the commercials that they're not loading fast enough, or they don't load in time, so you wind up, they show you 30 seconds of the material that should be after the commercial, and then, oh, wait, sorry, cut, back to commercials. Okay, now let's replay that stuff we already showed you before. It's just, it's annoying. And I guess, look, I think I'm going to revise my statement. I'm going to stick with, I am okay with you providing me commercials. You give me your commercial content, and look, it's the magic of streaming TV that you can give me updated commercials every time I watch. There's no outdated commercials. You know, you guys can give me new stuff that someone's paying for every time I tune in. I'm awesome with that. But my caveat is, if you're going to give me commercials to help mitigate my costs, then for God's sake, get your shit together and make them run smooth. Please don't make me have to restart a show after the commercials have screwed up 3 times. Don't put me in that position. Why would you do that to me? All right. Enough of my complaining about my awesome television stuff because, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm complaining about that only because once upon a time I can only get season 5 on Hulu, and which we just finished. And so therefore it has been so frustrating. We watched the first 4 seasons on Netflix, where it was smooth and awesome and easy and commercial free and we had a great time. And then, oh, hey, look, we can get the 5th season now. Click. Oh, this sucks. I mean, we still enjoyed the season, but man, the viewing experience was not nearly as good as Netflix. It's too bad. So anyway, enough of all that. Guess what it's time for? You see, you can tell that Aiden's here. Therefore, it must be time for the pod.
O-matic.
Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And for those of you who are new, I'm not kidding. I have a Pop-O-Matic bubble that I've taken out of a Trouble game. It had an R2-D2 in it, made the noises. Those are coming right out of it. And all I did was crack this sucker open, put in my own dice. He's beautiful. Serves me well. All right, and where do these questions come from? Well, that's where you guys come in. You want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And the first number we have here is 95, which I'm going to make a prediction that it's going to be from Sarah Beth or Kyle, because they own half of this list now. We may have to do something to fix that later, but for right now, they own half the list. So, oh my God, it's from Sarah Beth. Mrs. Dark says, does your brother Daniel listen to this podcast? I don't know for sure.
I wouldn't imagine so.
But ultimately, I would guess no, because he's never spoken to me about it. He's never written to me about it. He's never participated in the forums. Therefore, I predict that my brother Daniel does not listen to this podcast. I have talked about it with him on the occasions that I talked to him. He has always said, hey, that's awesome. No, that's really cool. And then he'll ask a few questions. And then I don't think he listens. I don't know if it's just not his speed. I mean, he's nerdy enough on his own, but I don't know.
And
anyway.
Daniel, if you are listening, we are so sorry.
And Daniel, if you are listening, dude, send me a Podomatic. Give me a listener betrayal. Something. Let me know you're out there. All right. Next one. Oh, hold on. I always have to number these. I should find a faster system so that I don't have to occupy you guys with this stuff. 15.
I came just in time.
Hey.
A little late than just in time.
Actually, it's past your bedtime by a good bit, buddy. Mm-hmm. I know. Hard being you, isn't it? But hold on. You want to do one with me before you have to go to bed?
15. All right. From Mrs. Darks.
Number 15 is also from Mrs. Darks. All right. Noah, this question is clearly for you. What do you think of the formal Friday movement? Have we become too casual in our business attire? Noah doesn't seem to have an opinion yet. He's thinking.
I think casual Fridays should get to very casual Fridays. And normal casual Mondays.
See, there you go. My son is a genius. Here I was giving him the business attire question, thinking I was being funny, sticking that on a 10-year-old. That kid knows his stuff. All right, if you guys couldn't hear, because I had to keep dragging him onto the mic because he kept fading on me. No, casual Friday should now be moved to extremely casual Friday, and then the regular casual Friday should then be moved to what is now called regular casual Monday. So we should have regular casual Monday, 3 days of regular business attire, and then super casual Friday.
All right.
I think this is brilliant. I'm up for that. You can't yell from across the room.
I just mean casual Monday.
Right. You mean what used to be casual Friday is now what you wear on Monday.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I feel like.
So wait. What is super casual? Is that when you come in your underwear and a bathrobe?
No.
No, just a bathrobe. Jeez. You prude.
No, that's where you bring stuff that's unnormal, blanket.
All right. Yeah, just come in wrapped in a blanket, he says. I'm sorry about him being off mic. You have to wear clothes with your blanket?
Yes.
All right.
Or some guy comes to a bathroom.
Anyway, you had an opinion on this, Aiden?
I feel that dressing formal for work is unneeded in any situation ever. Unless you have to deal with clients, as in people outside of the company, I feel it's completely unnecessary.
Right. Well, and
who are you dressing up for?
And I agree for the most part. I dress relatively casually in my workplace most of the time. I've always got a collar, but a lot of times it's just jeans and that kind of stuff. But also, I'm the computer guy. I'm a technician. I wind up crawling under desks and hauling lots of stuff. And there are certain parts of my job that require me to get dirty, and therefore, being strictly formal is not as strict. But here's the thing: is dealing with the public that happens in lots of situations. In lots of businesses, almost everybody who works there has to deal with the public on some level. Or, depending on how important you are, if you have to represent your company even internally, sometimes it's important to look good. And so, I don't know. I personally prefer casual. Like my brother's a lawyer, and he's a lawyer in Texas where it's super hot. Not that it isn't super hot here, but it's super hot there all the damn time. And at his law firm, shorts and t-shirts is perfectly acceptable. If you want to come to work in flip-flops, that's fine. But, you know, he still owns the suits for when he has to actually appear in court, when he actually has to go out and represent the company. He's got those. But most days, if you're not going to be meeting with clients, then there's no sense in having to dress up all the darn time, because that's just hot and uncomfortable. Yeah, they're right on board with you. All right, next question. 73. And any guesses who it's from?
It's from you. It's from you.
Oh, you think? Oh, no, it's from Irish Fan. Sweet, that dude's only got like 4 questions on this list. All right, Irish Fan. A root cause analysis. What is it, and how does it apply to global warming? He says, don't actually answer the second part. I listen to this podcast for fun. Root cause analysis. You mean when we have a technical issue at work, like for some reason people can't seem to open their Outlook this morning. And if I go in and each person that calls me, I'll get like 3 calls. And each person that calls me, hey, I can't get into my Outlook. Here's the error message it's given me. Oh, no problem. I have instructions on that. I've done with this, you know, dozens of times. I go in and I just click this, and then I, you know, recheck your phone. There's a whole list of stuff. And again, you'd think I'd have it memorized. I don't. But I go through the checklist. I get their stuff fixed up, and they're ready to go. And there's just 2 or 3 of them, so it's nice and easy to do. But root cause analysis, yeah, sure, I can fix their problem when they bring it to me, but at some point, if somebody can go and figure out why we're getting 3 of these a day, that would be our root cause analysis, is why it's actually happening, and thus, if we can fix that problem, then, yeah, each one of these only takes me, you know, 3 minutes to get the call, figure out what it is they're talking about. Oh, I pull it up and fix it. Yeah, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, somewhere in there. So each one is a quick, easy fix, and I can just check it off and close the call. But eventually, someone needs to spend a few hours actually getting to why these keep coming up every day. And once they find that, then we don't have to have a dozen people who each have to waste 10 minutes every time one of these comes up. That is, to me, yeah, that's really, really important. And I'm not usually the guy doing the root cause analysis, although sometimes I can. Sometimes I have the ability to figure it out in my local area. But most of the time, these are system-wide things that we've got dedicated people who do nothing but that down in Lincoln, and they do really, really well at it. How does that apply to global warming? Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to answer that. You're right. 05.
I'm sorry. Did you just spend a good 5 minutes explaining the question itself without actually answering it?
No, he said, what is root cause analysis? And then he said, okay, how does it apply to global warming? And then he said, don't answer part 2 because this is supposed to be fun. So I did exactly what he asked me to do.
Oh, but it's my fault, global warming. Just let you
know. Yeah, root cause analysis, Aiden. He's gassy. This is from Humongous. Do you or would you LARP?
No and no.
I have done things very close to LARPing, but I have never actually LARPed.
Look, I've done things that are almost homosexual.
Yeah, well, except without the homophobic overtones that you're giving off here. Seriously. No, whatever, bigot.
I'm saying that it'd be the same thing if you said it.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I've done things close to being homosexual.
Right, look.
Does church camp count?
Okay, well, hey, look, you can laugh at me, but you're half a LARPer yourself, so deal with it. Oh, really? Really? You didn't do the Circus Mystery Theater with us?
I was forced into that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you didn't enjoy it?
No.
A lot?
No.
Way more than he should have. We did a murder mystery party that my sister-in-law, Kyle's wife, put on for us while we were down in Texas last year, and it was awesome. We had a great time. And it involved, we made costumes for ourselves, and we dressed up, and we acted out the parts. Now, but again, that was a very scripted sort of event. I mean, yes, we had lots of freedom to play our parts and ad lib. But, you know, our roles are defined in the sense that, you know, here's who the murderer is. Here's the information that you're allowed to give away this session. Here's the people that you have to find a way to talk to, and you have to impart this information to them at some point so that we can hand out these clues. Like I say, it's a very scripted sort of scenario, but yeah, it was really LARPy, and it was a lot of fun. We had a great time. And I've done Live Dungeon with Jacob. We did that at Gen Con, which, look, Live Dungeon was fun, but not fun enough to spend that kind of money on again. I've never gone back. Sorry, Aiden. I've done, and Live Dungeon is not a LARP, but boy, it gets close to it. It's that kind of thing. So
it brushes up against LARP.
Right. Well, were you there? No, you weren't there with the little boys when they did the foam core weaponry. And there's rules to that kind of combat, and they did that at the Scout Jubilee 2 years ago, something like that. And, again, you're getting close to it. You're getting some of the elements of LARPing, but not actually LARPing yet. So
we've officially gotten 10 minutes on LARPing, people. Congratulations.
So because of all of that, I don't judge people who do LARP, but I am self-conscious enough that I don't see myself getting into that situation. And look, and you can LARP with dice. I get that. But I'm a real fan of my dice. Even when I'm keeping them as simple as humanly possible, I still like having my dice. I'm just built that way.
A whole bucket of them.
A whole bucket of dice. Yeah, what am I going to do? Throw them at people and yell fireball? I can't do that. Although it would be fun. See, again, they're horrible LARP stereotyping. I have no idea how they actually do their fireballs. Yeah, I'm judging based on Patton Oswalt's stereotyped LARPer character from Reno 911. So that really doesn't count. But yeah, I might LARP if the situation was right. I don't see it happening, but I can also see how it could. 13. 13 comes from Mrs. Darks. Hey, we haven't heard from her before. And Mrs. Darks says, "Is Google making us lazy? Why memorize if you can look it up? But do we use search results responsibly?" Oh, you had to throw that in. All right.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead. You've got an opinion.
It's not making us lazy per se. We're using a resource that is given to us. If you're given all the information in the world at your fingertips and you're told not to use it, what would that say as us as a people? I'm just saying that if we have an incredible tool to give us any information we could ever need, why not use it?
Right. Okay. Here we go. I just heard this week. This is wonderful. Plato had a real serious problem with writing. His problem with writing was, look, if you can write down information, then why would anyone need to memorize things anymore? Heck, if I can write it down and get it to you, then where is the personal quality of passing on information face to face? What's going to happen to our verbal skills if we can just write stuff down? That's Plato. Plato!
Writing makes us lazy.
So, to me, I feel like the concept that Google is making us lazy, that our brains are going to get lazy because we don't have to exercise those same muscles, I think it's a fallacious argument. I think it is.
Fallacious.
Shut up. Fallacious is a proper and non-dirty word. If you want to get invited back to this podcast, you will straighten up, young man. I think that argument just isn't going to hold water in the long run. And I heard this, that Plato thing, I heard it from a cyborg this week, and he was really fascinating. This was a guy who was pretty much the first cyborg, really. I mean, look, there's lots of cyborgs. But as far as having brain enhancements, oh man, this guy was cutting edge. This guy had essentially what Google Glass can do for you now. That's what he had. He had a companion, still has, he still uses it. He had a companion, computer thing, Lizzie, that, and the way he applied it was just amazing. It could do, all sorts of certain research for him, and it had a little heads-up display for him so that he could see it. It was just always there on his eye, and he had a little hand keyboard that he could work with one hand while it's down to this side. And I keep talking in past tense. The guy is still alive and still doing this. But he can work the keyboard with one hand without looking at it, so he can do it unobtrusively while it's at his side, in his pocket, under the table. So it's not like as he's talking to you, it's not like it's obvious that he's typing away on a computer, but he's constantly got his hand going so that he can look stuff up, and he also takes notes on his own life. When he meets somebody, he takes notes. He types in your name, your position, a distinguishing feature about you, some interesting things you said. Oh, did you mention that you had kids? And he'll just take notes on people as he's talking to them. Just, you know, writing them down for him to remember later. And thus, when he runs into that person again, he types in their name, and then the heads-up display, Lizzie, just starts giving him facts that the computer thinks would be relevant to him about this person, and cross-references it with all the, and it's not just on people, it's everything he does in his life. He takes little notes on every single thing he does. So, you know, and Lizzie keeps track of what day it was and who was there, and, you know, as he just types in his little notes, she cross-references all of it, and he just always has that available to him all the time. And
his, like a lot of work.
It does, but it's so second nature for him that he doesn't even have to think about it now. By the way, I say he's got all this stuff. He's been doing this since the early 90s. He's been doing this since there was barely an internet. That's how long this guy's been doing this. And he's amazing at it. And when you hear him talk about it and the other guys at MIT around him who saw this and thought it was the coolest thing and they all started doing it. And you hear him talk about it, and it's like, no, it enhances everything. He said, now suddenly I'm not afraid of social situations like I used to be because I have this confidence. I know that I'm going to remember who people are. I know that I'm going to, you know, that I'm not going to forget anything important. I know that, you know, he just talks about all the advantages it gives him and how good it makes him feel and how he has, you know, as a result of this, he became more social and more competent and more confident. And they even went even further and they talked about how, you know, there was like six or seven of these guys all doing this stuff. And they, for obvious reasons, they referred to themselves as the Borg. And for a while they experimented with using a group mind so that for a while the experiment was everybody has access to everybody's notes. They're all doing this. So if you've met one of them, then if you meet another one, he taps in your name. He already has all the notes available from everyone else's experiences with you. And so therefore, they're working as a hive mind, a group mind, so that they all have shared experiences that they can then, you know, because when you see Lizzie bring up your notes and, okay, I don't remember meeting this guy, but here, Lizzie is telling me that he's got all this, this, and this, and this. All right, fine. And you just work that into conversation. And okay, some people around them said that was really creepy and they stopped doing that. But no, I don't think Google is making us lazy at all. In fact, Google is amazing because there are certain things that I've wanted to know all the time in my life. There's always questions that come up, always things that you go, God, I wonder what, except now, 90% of the time when I think, oh, I wonder what that is, I can look it up. There will be an answer that I can find. Okay, I can't find the percentage of hedgehogs named Sonic. There's some things that I'm not going to be able to find.
Elephants.
Yeah, Elephonzi. Oh my God, we're looking at the elephants, and Aiden winds up making a play on words and makes a reference to Elephonzi, the coolest elephant ever. And we immediately pull out the phone, we go to Google, we look up Elephonzi. There is no picture of Elephonzi. There's no picture of an elephant with a pompadour haircut and a leather jacket going, nowhere. How is that not a thing? How is that not a thing? Someone out there with artistic skill, make me an Elephonzi. I demand it. Okay. There's all sorts of stuff that I want to know. And before Google, most of it is, it doesn't make me lazy because before Google, I just would never find out. I would never look for it because who's going to go to the library to see if there's such a thing as an Elephonzi? And if I was at the library, how would I even find such a thing? But now, I can look that up. And okay, Elephonzi is maybe not the most serious topic, but when I've wanted to look up stats on hunger in America, when I've wanted to look up stats on illiteracy, when I've wanted to look up stats on sexuality issues or anything at all, when I've needed to know the number of victims of the Nazis in various categories, okay, I can look that up. Dates, whatever.
and now, the numbers of the episodes and what cool facts you can say about
right.
them.
Right. It's all there. And there's no way I was going to memorize all of that stuff anyway. So, no, I don't think Google is making us lazy at all. And do we use search results responsibly? Probably not. I mean, I like to think that I do, but sometimes if I do a Google search for a question and the first answer that comes up looks really relevant and fits my preconceived notions, then maybe I don't look any further. So, okay, maybe that's not quite as responsible as it should be. And I'm sure that if, you know, a quality dude like me is being that lazy about it sometimes, then all the rest of these horrible peons that surround me, they certainly, are much more irresponsible than I am. So, yeah, that part's probably true. All right, one more, and then we're done. 73, because I think there's going to be a lot of listener betrayal tonight, and we really need to get to it. So, last one is... Huh.
Too far, but...
I know, I don't know how to control this thing. There it is, 73. It's from Mrs. Dark's surprise. Do you think a pre-Cana or other pre-marriage... do you think a pre-Cana or other pre-marriage counseling is a good idea? I absolutely think pre-marriage counseling is a good idea for all couples that want to get married. Whether you're religious or not, whether it's a traditional marriage or whatever pairing you want to imagine, pre-marriage counseling is an awesome idea. Because I think there are too many people who enter into marriage without exploring all of the possible conflict areas that are common to marriages. I mean, there are people who get married without ever discussing whether or not they want to have kids. There are people who get married and one of them just assumes that after you get married, well, then we'll combine our money and we'll have joint bank accounts because that's what my parents did. And the other one says, well, God, no, we're not getting joint bank accounts. Why would we do that? Things that seem obvious and basic, and they just assume that, well, of course, this is what we're going to do. And only after they're married do they find out that they have some real differences of opinion. And, you know, some things are minor, but some things aren't. And I think the cure for the divorce rate in this country, which is not as horrible as most people think it is, but I think there would be less divorce going on. And I think less divorce in general would be a good thing if people were staying together because they were having happier marriages. I think preventing bad marriages before they start, or at least making people think about them and talk them out and realize before they go into it, you know, they have the right expectations. They may still get married, but now at least they've talked this out beforehand and they have some preparation to ride out those troubles when they come up. I just think people are just not prepared sometimes. And I think, pre-marriage counseling from someone who is going to put them in a position to ask all of those questions and make them actually examine their answers and share honestly with each other how they feel about things, I think is a great idea. I really do. So that's me. All right. That is enough of the Podomatic. We've got to be done. And so I'm going to leave it over to GLaDOS. That's her. And she'll give us a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage. She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. No. Okay, I think I'm all right then. Sweet. All the songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. All right, I meant to say all of my bumper music is available on iTunes. Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk, I don't believe is available on iTunes, but you can find it out in what stuff that's free to use?
GarageBand?
No, not software. Music, intellectual property.
SoundCloud?
No, you're not even trying now. Public domain, that's the word. Wherever it is out there, by searching for Death Metal Disco Ian Kronk, Kaz has found it, and he listens to it constantly. So go, Kaz. The song is awesome. Anyway, let's see. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to your friends. Look, you can also like my Facebook page. That really helps me out. Like my Facebook page. Give me 5-star reviews on iTunes or whatever whatever source you use to gather up podcasts. Write me a good review. That helps out too. But again, the best thing you can do is recommend it to your friends. Spread the word. If you're enjoying this, please, please, please let other people know so that they can enjoy it as well. Remember, I'm always looking for your listeners to do my work for me. So don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch every week on the forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds and on Facebook for Listener Betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact, as Kaz did this week, about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling, grueling research. You know how I hate to actually do work.
Handy dandy Google, mind you.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is, if you do a Google search for the number, it'll give you the Wikipedia page for that number, and then a specific set of results, and a lot of them start to look alike after a while. Like this 141 was a very complicated, that 141 happens to be a Bloom number, which is a special kind of semi-prime. And you get a lot of that for every number. Shakespeare Sonnet 141, you get Shakespeare Sonnet every week. If you go to Google and you skip the Wikipedia, it will give you lists of highways that have that number. It'll give you what countries use that number as an emergency code on their telephone system. It'll give you, there's certain things that come up for every single number. And I can repeat them. But you know, I don't want to do one that I just did in the last 2 or 3 weeks, because then they all start to sound alike. So it's really hard to break them up, and that's why I appreciate when you people out there do that work for me, because this is really hard, people. Anyway, my contact info, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, but to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me. Yeah, say it with me. You come over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there. You send me a message. We'll hang out together. We'll become best friends in the world. And then what do we do? What do? We have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I go out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I go out to Facebook, and I post up, hey, I am recording right now. Anything you post here, I will include at the end of the podcast, and that is what I'm doing right now. First on Listener Betrayal, this is a question I actually received under the heading Pod-O-Matic from my friend DM Darks. And DM Darks wrote to me, and again, it's a time-sensitive question because it pertains to Gen Con. And so I wanted to make sure, since it's also kind of lengthy, and it is, again, you know, current and time-sensitive, I wanted to make sure I got this out of the way. So I'm going to put it into Listener Betrayal to make sure we get an answer on this. And DM Darks writes, as I write this question at 7 a.m. on a day off, why am I even awake? I know. I'm wearing a T-shirt. This particular T-shirt has a picture of Princess Peach and Daisy holding the same green mushroom.
Two girls, one up?
Don't get ahead of the story. It's all done in the artistic style of Paper Mario. Above the picture, in a Mario-esque font, are the words, two girls, one up. It's the first image that pops up if you do a Google search for that term. Yes, I've seen it. I'm aware of it, obviously. Aiden was also aware of it. All right, anyway, DM Darks continues. I think this shirt is hilarious. It made me crack up when I saw it on a website, and I believe Mrs. Darks saw it. I really like this shirt, but I hardly ever wear it out on days that I'm planning on... I hardly ever wear it out on days that I'm planning on staying in town. I live, depending on how you count it, 1 to 2 blocks away from the school that I teach in. There's nothing technically offensive about the art on the shirt at all. My worry is having to explain the reference to someone else, particularly a student, or scarier yet, a student's parent or administration.
Don't worry about the students. They already get it.
Not all of them, though. There's conversation here. People who know it know it, so I'm not worried about that. I've not seen the medium that the shirt is referencing and never plan to, but I am aware of what its contents are, and I wouldn't want kids looking that up and thinking that I would watch something like that, obviously. In fact, I don't want most kids even aware of the fact that I know that that exists. We're right, because you're a good teacher. That being said, is there any leeway for band teachers? Are you guys allowed to be a little more hippy-trippy? Can you do that? Probably not. All right, anyway, not in a public school. That being said, given like a religious school would be better for this. I'm sorry, that was a dumb comment. That being said, DM Darks continues, given that there can be young children around, and given the recent state of some bigoted sexist protests being directed at Gen Con, if I wear this shirt at the con, will Nelly hate me forever? Okay. Well, to answer that, I posted a picture of this shirt on Listener Betrayal and said, hey, Nelly, what do you think of this shirt? So, before we look at her answer, I'll give you my own answer, which is, I also find that picture really funny.
Oh, of course.
I understand where it's coming from. I understand, you know, how the reference ties together. I think Two Girls, One Up is really funny. It's a play on words, and it's, again, it's a harmless picture of two female characters from a game holding what is a one-up. That's funny. Okay. I agree that it's funny. However, because of the issues around it, and especially as the climate has changed in regards to what's appropriate for sex-based, gender-based humor, I would never own such a shirt myself because I would have nowhere that I would feel comfortable wearing it ever. My wife is also a teacher, and there is certainly no place that she would be comfortable with me wearing that shirt. All right, look, we've gone off to events, weddings, where she wants to drink a little bit because, you know, there's nothing wrong with a teacher having a drink, but you certainly don't want a student seeing you out of control or having a little too much to drink. And so, therefore, she's always a little worried that if she has a drink or two, is someone going to see her with it? Is she going to, you know, are they going to think that she's drunk even if she's not? Are they? And I've always said, look, we're out of town. What's going to possibly happen? And no matter where we are, we can be 300 miles away. We will run into a student from her school. I swear to you, it happens every time. We're in Omaha for a family wedding. This is years ago. We're in Omaha for a family wedding. And she's just standing outside with the other people, and we've all got our drinks, and we're just hanging out talking. And I had just reassured her before we got there that, look, nobody's going to know you. Quit being paranoid. There's nothing wrong with having a drink. Sure enough, someone's tugging on her shirt minutes after we get outside, going, Mrs. Jones? Mrs. Jones? Oh, my God. They're everywhere. Everywhere. So, yeah, I could never wear that shirt myself anywhere. But I do see why it's funny. I find it very humorous, but couldn't do it. But hold on. My wife has stuff to add. Oh, yeah. Lisa just reminded me that we were in Chicago, for God's sake. We were several hundred miles away from home. We're in Chicago walking down the street, and, wow, that couple really looks familiar. And then they look at us like, wow, you guys really look familiar. And finally we place them. We're like, oh, my God, you go to church with us. Oh, that's right. And it was weird. Really weird. I think they had gone to Kinder Music with us too, that they had a kid the same age. But either way, oh, and my wife says he also works at our local grocery store. So anyway, but now having said that, again, I find it funny. I sympathize with you, Pat. I could not own or wear that shirt myself, but I absolutely understand where you're coming from. And because of my own personal feelings on, I'm going to guess the con is a no-go because again, yeah, look, if there's kids around, if they see it and they already know what it means, then you're not harming them. And if they don't know what it means at a con, it's unlikely that they're going to stop you and ask you. But I think the risk of offending somebody is too great. And you know, it's something you can, yeah, I'm thinking you're going to have to retire that shirt, man. I really do. But we did cover this on Facebook. I posted up a picture of that shirt and I said, hey, Nelly, because, you know, you specifically asked about Nelly. Let's see what she says about this. Hey, look, people have commented on my stuff. All right. Let's find out what they say. All right, here we go. My God, there's a lot of stuff here. All right, let me... Done! We're all finished. Okay, now, I've ended that thread, and let's see what everyone says about it. All right, and Nellie is the first one to respond and says, nope, not a fan of that one. Though Derek thought it was funny, it could be that I'm just not super into Mario. Super into Mario. That's really cute. To which Sarah Beth then replies, Pat owns that shirt. I bought it for him. With a little winky face. Yeah, see, we know because we just read his letter. That's why we're here. Isn't that great? So then, all right, that's it for the commentary on the shirt. Yeah, dude, I don't know if I'd risk it at the con. Again, it's cute. And again, I don't think you're going to scar any children. I think the worst you're going to do is offend some adults that just don't find that funny. But I don't think you're going to offend anybody enough that they're going to alienate you. So, I mean, you know, judgment call, I probably wouldn't. Well, I mean, I know I wouldn't, but I'm just saying I wouldn't judge you if you did, except that I'm judging you. So there you go. Take that as you will. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just jerking with you, man. Then Nellie goes on to comment not on the shirt and says, also, do you ever get really, really, really wiped out by a con? Do I ever? Well, not really, because I don't go often enough. I'm not like you. Oh, I wish I could be like that. I'm jealous of you.
Sleepovers at weird places. That knocks you out.
Yeah. You know, sleeping in weird places, that's exhausting. And so, in that sense, the con, unless you've got a really nice hotel room, that's going to wipe me out just because you're not sleeping enough as it is. And while you are sleeping, you're in a room full of people that aren't normally in the room with you when you sleep. And not in your own bed. And yeah, you'll be really, really exhausted afterwards. But you know, I only do it once a year for Gen Con. And so far it's only been like once every 3 years. So, really, I can tolerate it pretty well. But let's see, how do you cope with being completely burned out? After 5 days of Origins Game Fair, I'm completely exhausted mentally and physically. Oh my God, you play so hard, it's exhausted you. I'm so jealous. Although, look.
You lay on the floor and cry.
Yeah, look, yeah, lay on the floor and cry. That's a good suggestion. My own personal experience with this is things have worked out this summer that we've just got stuff going on all the time. And so, you know, we spent the night at the zoo, which was a ton of fun. But again, you didn't get a lot of sleep while you were there because as cool as the aquarium is, and I love being there, you know, I'm sleeping on a cot. I'm afraid that my snoring is going to disturb other people who are there because I snore kind of badly. So, hey, you know, Pat, Dave, Sarah Beth, you guys have that to look forward to. And so I get a little paranoid and I didn't sleep well. And, you know, we didn't have that much time to sleep in the first place. And now, this weekend, oh, what's going on this weekend? Oh God, no, this weekend. All right. I've got game night on Friday. My kid's going to be in a play on Saturday. Noah is. And at least we think he is. And then Sunday we leave for Camp Cedars where I'm going to be sleeping on a cot in a tent in the heat in the woods for 6 nights.
On a bump on a log that you found in a hole in the sea.
Exactly right. And yeah, it just drains you. How do I deal with it? Is I find a day off. I mean, honestly, that's really all I can do. So I find a day off where I'm not going to do a damn thing. I am going to take a long shower, and then I'm going to get back in bed, and I'm going to watch TV or read Facebook or do nothing. Read a book and lay there and not move for a whole day. That's really the only way I can recover is I have to just do nothing for a while. And that's the problem with times like this is I don't have that day to do nothing just yet. It's going to be after I get back from Camp Cedars, I will then have a weekend where I've got nothing going on. We will have one weekend with nothing happening at all. And that'll be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. But anyway, oh, hey, Sarah Beth says, Happy Father's Day, sir. Well, thank you, Sarah Beth. I had a great Father's Day, so I appreciate you thinking of me.
Well,
I hope.
Catching it in the last half hour, Sarah Beth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. 25 minutes from now and it would have been too late. And I hope you and yours had a wonderful day today. I hope you guys did something special for Pat and, I hope you guys had a good time. So, and then Kaz says, yay, I can't wait to hear this at work tomorrow night. Now for a question. Preacher or Outcast for Freaky Supernatural TV? I haven't seen either one. So therefore, oh, which one am I going to pick?
Outcast.
Aiden says Outcast. excellent. Why? All right. He says he doesn't know a single thing about either one of them, but his vote is outcast. Absolutely outcast. So, if the choice comes up, that's the way I'm going. Got it. And now we're done. That's the end of Facebook, so let's head on over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. We'll check out Nerd Pride Radio. And look at that, there's a couple of replies on this one, too. So, I did mention here that my air conditioning is broken, and at the time I started recording, it was 82 degrees in my house and getting warmer. It's now finally started getting cooler. Thank goodness. But that was in mind. So, I then have Produce Farmer. Hey, Produce Farmer. Awesome. Produce Farmer says, "Hi, Mike. Regarding the t-shirt you posted up, it's not really my cup of tea. Glad to be able to finally catch on to these at the usual time." Yeah, that's true. Because I've been recording at odd times the last few weeks, and it's really thrown people off. So, yeah, I can't guarantee Sunday nights. You know, next week, let's see, next weekend I'll be at Scout Camp on Sunday, so I don't know if I'll be recording Sunday night. I don't know if I'll record Saturday before I leave. I don't know. I have no idea. So things are going to be weird again coming up. But yes, I'm glad I got a Sunday night one where you guys could actually expect me to be here and be prepared for stuff. So Produce Farmer then says, "Seeing as how your old podcast was from way back, most of the podcasts I used to listen to from back then are mostly gone. What are some old podcasts you miss from back in the day?" That is a great question. And then he adds, "Have a good weekend, brother," which, hey, working on it, dude. Old podcasts that I miss. All right. I have several discontinued podcasts that I wish were still around. Walking the Room. I loved Walking the Room. Those guys just had a chemistry together, and they were filthy and fun, and they reminded me a lot of me and my brother and the chemistry that we had going back and forth, except that these guys are professional comedians. And I loved Walking the Room, and I was sorry to see that one end. Thrilling Adventure Hour. Aiden just brought that up. And, look, if you guys have not listened to Thrilling Adventure Hour, go out right now and start from episode one and listen until you run out of them. You will not regret it. It is absolutely wonderful. Now, don't be fooled. They just released a new episode with new content this week. And I got to listen to a whole new episode of Thrilling Adventure Hour, which turned out to be the final official episode from their tour. Because they ended the show, they ended the podcast, but then they went on tour for a while, and this is a recording of one of their shows from Australia, I think. And this was actually recorded in May of 2014, and it's just now finally being released now. So, yeah, they've dribbled out just two or three things over the last couple of years, but they're done. I mean, this is really the end of it. You're not going to get new stuff. But Thrilling Adventure Hour is still worth listening to. It is comedy radio plays in the style of old-style radio pulp serial things, and they're fantastic. The writers, Acker and Blacker, are absolutely brilliant. They know their stuff. They know how to get these styles going. It is intellectual comedy at its finest, and the performers absolutely love each other. You have never seen a cast of people who so enjoy working together and doing what they do. It is amazing. And so listen from episode one and run all the way through them. And when you get to anything where they're at an interview panel or a convention or whatever, just skip those episodes. Just go for the ones that have story content. That's all you need. And you will be thrilled to death. You will enjoy every moment of it. You will thank me afterwards, and then it'll be done and you'll be sad that there's no more. That's just how it goes. But you should listen. Sayer's not even, that's not even way back in the day. That just finished up, what, in the last year, 6 months ago? Sayer was a short run of 40-some episodes, and phenomenal. A phenomenal story that inspired me to start playing Paranoia again, because Sayer is very much in the Paranoia vein, and it is dark, dark, but funny. So funny. Love Sayer. There's others that I have listened to that have faded out on me. But those are the best of them. absolute best of them. I'm sure there's some others that I'll remember and go, oh, yeah, that's right, I like that too, but I can't remember what they are. So anyway, that's it from Produce Farmer. Next up is Casmonster again. If a member of your family were to turn evil, Aiden, like supervillain evil, Aiden, why is it Kyle? What would his first plot be? Oh, all right.
I am so disappointed in you.
Kaz, you played me, dude. You got me on that one. I completely walked into that. All right, first off, there's a flaw in your question in that it wouldn't be Kyle. Kyle would never be supervillain evil. He is secretly the good brother. But I am manipulative enough that I've always made it look like he's the asshole brother. But really, I'm the selfish brother and he's the good brother. That's just how it's always been. But he's so nice that he's let me take credit for all the good things. He's let me be the good face, while he plays bad cop in the background. But if he was gonna be supervillain evil, I don't know what his plot would be. But I do know his motivation. His motivation is he is only trying to protect his family. That's all. Look, he just wants to keep them safe. And if that includes destroying an entire coastline, then so be it. That's just what has to happen to keep his brood safe. Okay? So, again, I don't know exactly what the plot would be, although, go classic Superman and let's drop California into the into the ocean. That's completely reasonable. Completely reasonable. I think Lex Luthor was onto something. And again, if he were to do that, then his family would be safe forever, right? That's how it works. Okay. Kaz continues. Zombie apocalypse time. What do you save and where do you take it? I save my family. I would take my computer because my computer has so much in it that is useful and meaningful to me, and it doesn't take up a lot of space, and it's already in the bag that has all of my medications in it that I was going to need anyway. So, my family and my computer, and we'd take it all out to my in-law's place, because I've already told you, my in-law's place is the perfect place in this area, for facing off a zombie apocalypse. That's just, or any sort of apocalypse, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, any apocalypse for that matter. They've got the food, they've got the resources, they've got the guns. We could hide out there for a good long time. It's defensible. We got all sorts of things out there. So that's absolutely where I'm going. So, my wife has something to add. Okay. It wasn't podcast related. All right. And then the next thing, last thing from Kaz Monster is how awesome is the Moana trailer? Go watch it if you haven't. I want an answer. Oh, the Moana trailer is awesome. I've liked Moana since the first teaser trailers. I think Moana, it looks wonderful. Moana, the new Pixar movie?
Is this a claymation one?
No, it's not claymation. It's a Hawaiian-themed one. So, I hope it does really well. I really do. I have a feeling that it is not going to do as well as some of the others, through no fault of its own, but I hope I'm wrong. And again, and the reason I think that is I think, for cultural issues. I honestly, for the same reason that, The Princess and the Frog didn't do as well as other Disney princess movies, even though there was no reason it shouldn't have, I think it just happens.
It's because she's black, isn't it?
Yes, because she's black. Thank you. I was dancing around it, but, I just think that there's enough, unspoken,
racism. No,
I wouldn't even say racism necessarily, but there is racial bias, unrecognized racial preferences that people wouldn't even say that they had. If you ask them directly, they wouldn't believe that of themselves at all. And yet, they're not as likely to go out and see a Disney princess movie if it's a black princess. That's just how people are. So I'm hoping that that doesn't happen to Moana. But, I have a feeling it might. So,
But it looks awesome, doesn't it? It's really exciting. So, I'm all on board. All right. We are all done with this podcast and everyone has now abandoned me. So the only one left to say goodnight is R2. Say goodnight, R2. Awesome. Good night, guys. I love you. Hopefully I'm broadcasting from the scout camp next week. We'll see how it goes, but I will bring, I shouldn't guarantee because who knows what's going to come up, but I'm pretty sure I'm giving you an episode next week. Come hell or high water. So, I recorded from scout camp last year. There's no reason I can't do it again. We're going to have a great time with this. So, I will see you next time. You guys have a good night. Bye.